Why should you visit TheChairShot.com? TheChairShot.com is your home for hard-hitting reviews, news, opinion, and analysis with attitude. Why? Because you're smarter than the average fan. TheChairShot.com. Always use your head.
You think you know me?
Especially for me on ChairShot Daily. Of course, I am Greg DeMarco. You can follow me on the Twitter at ChairShotGreg. You can also follow me on any form of social media there. You can even email me, GregDeMarco at TheChairShot.com. And you can call on the show, too, if you want to join us here. We're at 914-803-4532. That's 914-803-4532. We'll be here for about the next hour, myself and, of course, Mr. Velvet Pipes himself, Christopher Platt. Mr. Platt.
Greetings and salutations, and greetings, everybody. I'm excited to be here, Greg, and we are officially on the road to WrestleMania. The gift cards, gas,
yes,
up,
we are.
Bags are packed. Let's go.
Yeah, man, we've got people pointing to signs at the Royal Rumble, so obviously that means it is time for the road to WrestleMania. It was funny, too, because it wasn't until the end of the Women's Royal Rumble that we realized there wasn't a WrestleMania sign hanging in the stadium. So we were just like, oh, wait, there's no sign. And all of a sudden they put one up on the screen. So based on the arena setup, I don't think they could have hung up a sign. So I think that is the issue there. I'm sure we'll see one tonight on Raw. So it was good stuff, though. It was enjoyable. We're going to get into that. We're going to be talking about the show itself, and we've got the live perspective and the televised perspective, which is why I don't usually like to go down the row and go down the show match by match, but I think we have something to offer here with the way that, our perspective on this show and what we saw. So we can do that. But before we do that, I was at the Royal Rumble last night, and I was wearing one of my Chair Shot t-shirts. And then, Chris, how about we tell people where they can find those?
Not a problem. You guys can go to ProWrestlingTees.com/TheChairShot and pick up your official ChairShot shirt. So when you make your way to WrestleMania or Elimination Chamber or even a Raw or a SmackDown or even NXT, you can represent as well. Again, that's ProWrestlingTees.com/TheChairShot. And Greg, I believe that flash sale is still going on for a few more hours, correct?
It is until, midpoint of today. I think they got like another hour if they want to get in on that. So that 15% off with the promo code RUMBLE can be done.
So do that. While you're listening to us, you can go ahead and hop on your computer, your laptop, or your work computer. Hopefully you don't get caught. And again, go to ProWrestlingTees.com/code RUMBLE. You get 15% off all of your Chair Shot merchandise.
Exactly. And, of course, you can even find Chris on the Twitter at The Real C Platt on Twitter. So go ahead and check him out as well. Chris, yeah, you obviously watched the Royal Rumble last night. I know you and Ray talked about it on Chair Shot Radio as well, which you can find at TheChairShot.com. Overall, what'd you think? What were your thoughts just kind of as soon as the show ended?
Well, I think I'm dragging ass. I mean, late nights and early morning don't mix very well.
I know.
I thought it was a really good show. I did. It was long as hell, but it was good. They kept me entertained throughout, and I'd probably give it a 7 out of 10.
Okay. Okay, I mean, I have to give it a 10 out of 10, but I was there live, and we're going to talk about that live bias here in a little bit, because it's a real thing, and it is as real as it can possibly be, like being there live, especially for a Royal Rumble. There's nothing quite like it. I mean, it's crazy, but you're literally just waiting and counting, and you love waiting and counting, which is the crazy part of it all. That's what a live Royal Rumble is all about, and I know you've been, and I've been. But I was there last night, and so we're going to get into that once we get into the actual Rumble matches themselves. But the night started off with Becky Lynch, the man, coming out first on the pay-per-view, which I kind of figured was going to happen. And she went on one-on-one with Asuka, and of course Asuka was able to pick up the victory via submission, which surprised me a little bit that Becky Lynch tapped out, especially someone else who didn't lose by tap out later in the night. But tap out win for Asuka over Becky Lynch. So what were your thoughts of this match on television?
On television, first off, it's funny because I actually have the replay on in the background. And as soon as you said the man, Becky Lynch, she literally walked out. That was perfect timing. That was great.
I said that way. I didn't. But.
Nice. This match, honestly, I need to go back and rewatch it because I was finishing up dinner as the pay-per-view was starting. So I was kind of back and forth between the kitchen and the living room watching this match. It was okay. I don't know if it was a clash of styles, but it didn't seem like they really clicked. Obviously, the crowd was super hot for Becky, and they were into the action. But I don't know. There was a bit of a disconnect. I was also surprised by the tap-out victory, but I think that kind of telegraphed what was going to happen later on in the show. But, yeah, this match, I don't know what it was. They just – I don't know.
Yeah, because live it was great. I mean, I think you had a couple things going on live. Number one, you had Becky coming out first, which people went nuts for because it was Becky, and she's arguably the most over star in the company, although there were a lot of big pops last night. Asuka was over too. She got a great reaction. I mean, it was very much, you know, both were getting a lot of love from the fans in attendance. Live, the match was good. It was weird. So this match suffered. I won't say suffered, but there was an issue earlier in the show. And if people have been to a live WWE show, you've probably noticed that when someone takes a bump on the mat, it's really loud. And it's really loud because it's mic'd. And there's a microphone there, and it comes through certain speakers to give you that ambiance, and so it can come across on the cameras and all of that. And beginning of this match, there was this loud, ringing. It's like ringing in your ears, and then that mic got cut off. And so for a little while, it was odd. It was almost like you're watching it on TV, even though you were there live, because you couldn't hear any bumping for a while. And then about midway through the match, that got turned back on. So that was – but people were just into every little thing they were doing. The kickoff show happens, obviously, but I think, you know, some people aren't there. Some people are getting food. They're walking around. So the kickoff show didn't factor in as much. Like, this was the opener for a lot of people, and that showed based upon the crowd reaction. So live, it was really good. I think people were surprised when Becky tapped out. There was a kind of a gasp in the air, because even if she was going to lose, I don't think anyone expected her to lose clean, especially as over as she is and everything that they're doing with her. So, but you're right. It kind of telegraphed some things for later in the night. They focused a lot on Becky after the match, I noticed, because we could kind of see it up on the big screen on her reaction and just her being dejected and her disappointment as she was walking away. So, you're right. It did factor in later in the night. Andrew actually had this as one of his top five matches of the week when he did the top five on the chair shot, which is out right now. And of course you can read that and vote on it over at thechairshot.com. But I liked it. I thought it was a good match. I expect it to be the opener. It made sense for it to be the opener, as over as Becky is and did his job. So I'm down so far.
Yeah, it was definitely a great match to open the show with. I wanted to ask you, were you guys able to see the holographic images that they had whenever the wrestlers came out? Did you guys see that live in the arena?
Nope. None of that stuff. No. It's funny. I was watching, and as soon as when Asuka came out, when I was watching on the network, I was like, oh, they did that stuff. Okay. And like right now, I'm watching right now, and I see Sasha's sunglasses on top of the roof of the lighting rig. I always hated the holographic images. Just never been a fan. It does nothing for me. I think just showing the live experience to me is enough, but it also doesn't take anything away from it for me. But I've never been, I could live without that, basically.
That's fair. It's like dessert with your dinner. It's a nice touch, I think. But
yeah, exactly.
Not
like,
but it's a nice touch.
Yeah, nothing wrong with it. It's not necessary. Interesting. You know, they do the video boards around the arenas, like the little skinny ones that kind of wrap around. One thing I noticed about the Royal Rumble, it never changed. It never moved. It never did anything. It was just WWE Royal Rumble the whole night. And usually when somebody enters, their entrance factors into what's wrapped around the arena. And that didn't happen at all today or last night, which I thought was strange and jumped out to me as well. I noticed it about halfway through the show. I was like, these have never, ever changed. So.
That is interesting. And it sounds like they had a few logistical problems last night, just, you know, from your live experience with the mic and that. And that's weird for WWE because typically they're so meticulous and on point with that type of stuff.
Right.
Like, that's like WCW stuff right there.
It's weird. I mean, obviously, they've never run this building before. They've never run Chase Field for anything. And so they did have a few things to figure out. Based on what you're saying, I'm guessing that didn't come across on the broadcast at all.
Well, there were times where I thought the crowd was weird, oddly quiet. So that might have been because there were some issues with the mic and stuff like that. So, and I know we talked about that a little bit last night on Chair Shot, that there were a couple of issues. So when you said that, that made perfect sense to me because there were certain times, like even in this match, where it was almost like a New Japan crowd. You know how they just kind of sit on their hands and watch the match and they're not very emotive. So that makes sense now that they did have some technical issues.
And I think, you know, miking a crowd is a very, detailed job. And who knows if they know exactly how to mic a crowd. Nothing was hanging from the ceiling at Chase Field. So I'm guessing it was the kind of situation you couldn't hang anything from there. So I don't know exactly where all they can mic the crowd from, if they have to do it from the lighting rig and nowhere else and what that would do. It was plenty loud in the building, which, you know, we talked about last night, but it was super loud. The only match that was down in the building was the Daniel Bryan AJ Styles match, and that's because it was coming right off of the Women's Royal Rumble, and so I understand why that match got the type of reception that it did. But yeah, the technical issues were minor. I mean, you had the issue with the mat and the microphone. I think it cut out a couple of times. It cut out during the Men's Royal Rumble. Interestingly enough, when Titus and Curt Hawkins were under the ring. So my guess is they hit something and maybe caused that to happen. And then the video board issues, like that was minor too. Like I heard a couple people ask about that. It was just times where the video board showed the Royal Rumble logo instead of the match for like 10 seconds or – you know, showed an entrance. We usually didn't show the entrances, just showed the kind of the Titantron that would be on during the entrances. So those were little things. But yeah, it was, the crowd was hot all night. And I did find that interesting that it doesn't come across on TV. Other thing that's interesting about how it came across on TV, this show started, you know, the kickoff started at 3 PM and the actual main show started at 5 PM local time, but it looks like nighttime inside the baseball stadium. And I thought they did a good job of that. Whenever you see a window, you can see the sunlight. But other than that, you could, it looked like it was an indoor show at night. And that's something that I like because I hate daytime wrestling shows, especially because WWE is all about the pomp and circumstance. So you got the lights and you got the music and you got everything. You can't see that as well during the daytime. So this worked for me from that logistical setup. Second match of the night.
No, I was going to say, I kind of like daytime wrestling. Number one, it's something unique. You don't get it all the time. And, I was at Mania 31 in the Bay, and that was outdoors, of course, at, I think, SunTrust or whatever the hell it's called nowadays. But it kind of gave me the feel of, like, as if I was in the Roman Colosseum. I just think it's kind of cool. Now, to your point, though, when dusk hit and it was time for Taker and Bray Wyatt to come out, it did take away from their entrance, you know, talking about the pop and the circumstances. But I think it's a cool visual watching daytime wrestling.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely get that. I liken it back to, and this is a really, really old school comment. There was a concert tour years ago. It was Metallica and Guns N' Roses. They did a stadium tour together. And you know, Metallica went on in the middle and Guns N' Roses would close because, you know, even though it's probably backwards these days. But and I remember Faith No More, I think, was the opening band. And I read an interview with Metallica at the time, and they made an interesting – they loved the fact that when they went out on stage, it was daylight, and by the time they were done, it was dark. Like, it got dark while they were on stage with the way that the concert setup worked that they were doing. So I think there's an element of that, and I think you could actually use that, you know, to your advantage with someone like an Undertaker and Bray Wyatt. if you plan it out right. You know, bust out, I don't know, the Farmer's Almanac and see when the sun's supposed to go down. I don't know. But this show, definitely, you know, you can see the light coming through when the cameras go up, but that's really, really it. The other thing is, we're talking about the setup. They were not shy, I noticed, at least on, about getting the empty seats up really high on camera. I don't know if that came across to you at all, but there were some empties up top, and you know, I'm definitely okay with that. Did you notice that at all, the empty seats?
Every now and again, you would see a shot, and it seemed like it was like a mistake. That was another thing. A lot of the cameramen and stuff like that had some issues tonight as well. So I'm thinking those were mistakes, and somebody either got cursed out, fired, or both last night, because there were a few times where, yeah, they shot things that they probably weren't supposed to shoot. But for the most part, they did a good job of making it seem like it was a capacity crowd.
Yeah. Well, and I'll be honest with you, like, knowing the building and that 48,000 number, when they give you an attendance figure, that word attendance is very interesting, because that means everybody. That means fans. That means staff. That means people selling you hot dogs. Those are people in attendance, and that's always been that way. That's not like this is a new phenomenon. That's not paid crowd. That's not the house. That's not the draw. That's just in attendance. That 48,000 number is legit. Like that place was pretty damn full. There were some empties in the upper sections and you know, the upper part of the upper sections. But other than that, it was pretty it was pretty full, and it definitely came across well live. The lower half of the stadium was literally a sea of humanity. Like, the way they had the floor done and the bowl that we were in was just this huge, huge sea of people. And it comes across on the show. Like, the hard cam, which goes back into like this long row of people and then the stadium, just looks really good. Like, I was really impressed with the hard cam shot as I watch it back on the network. So I hope they use the stadium again.
How close were you guys to the ring? Because it looked, you know, the ringside, it looks very close. But then when you watch the performers come down the ramp, it seems like they're kind of far away. The fans are far away from it.
We were so they were coming out of one dugout, and they had that kind of set up. We were like, if you were behind the other dugout and then one more to the left, we were basically looking straight onto the ring, actually, where we were.
Okay.
It was a good view. I was worried. I mean, you don't look a gift horse in the mouth, but I was worried that, you know, the lighting truss, because I figured they were going to have to use it, would be in the way, and it really wasn't. And the way the lighting truss was set up, I don't think it obstructed a whole lot of people's vision anyway. So I think it was a good setup. I didn't hear any complaints from people, for that matter, in that regard. Didn't really see any on social media either. But, yeah, we had a great view. We could not see the entrances, which I know we talked about last night. At all. We just, the way that the curve was set up. People keep talking about the curved ramp. It wasn't a ramp at all. They're walking on the floor. But the way it was set up, because it curved around to the middle entrance, we couldn't really see that. But that wasn't a huge deal. It's, you know, we got the entrances. You get the music, especially with the Royal Rumble. The comes when the music goes off, not when the person walks out. So we got all of that. But unique setup for sure, but I'm not worried about not being able to see the entrances. They very well could have thrown a stage in the outfield and done what they did when it was at the Alamo Dome, which is just using the typical Raw and SmackDown stage. But I like this setup better. It made the show feel more special than just using the usual stage. It felt like a Royal, or more like a WrestleMania and less like a SummerSlam per se. So I'm on board with the setup.
And I'm the slow one in the family, so this is why I can't get it. But logistically, in my head, I'm trying to make it make sense in reflection or in comparison to a baseball stadium. But you said that they came out the dugout. So if it was set up like a baseball field, they came out the dugout, and then where would they have walked to get to the ring?
Like second base. Like, the ring was probably
okay.
Over to second base. So they kind of curved out and ended up – and it wasn't really curved. It was a straight aisle, and then it turned right as you get to the ring. So in the dugout had just a video board with a video board behind it. The way they walked out, it was real simple. It had the lights all around it though, and lights on the floor. It was good. Like I said, I like that better. The outfield where a stage would have been set up, that's where you saw the international announce teams. They were set up back there. That's where the hard camera was. So if they put a stage back there, it would have been a really interesting. They almost would have had to shoot, I don't know, at the stage. Like, I don't know where they would have put the hard camera if they put the out there. They would have cut off a big section of the stadium, and they would have been shooting at fans that were on an angle, which I think would have been interesting if they put a hard camera not in the outfield. So I think what they did worked. And I like the setup. I mean, I know it was just some four video boards and the lights and the big lighting truss, but it felt big time. And that's – it's made it feel like a major happening. So but it was an interesting – I've seen a couple of wide shots on the network feed so far, so you can kind of see the setup. But when you're watching, watch out for that as people make their entrance and everything, and you can kind of see how the setup is. Different for sure, one I've never seen before, and who knows if they do it again. I don't know. We'll see.
One more thing I'm noticing as I'm going back and watching the Asuka and Becky matches, with Becky with her selling, whenever Asuka would put her in a hole, it would appear like she tapped like four or five times in the match. It was just part of her selling, but that just kind of cracked me up a little bit.
Yeah, the whole tap thing is interesting. And, of course, you and I were watching back when there was no tapping and people would actually verbally submit, shake their head yes, that sort of thing. For me, it's you know, when they pound their fist on the mat or anything and slap the mat out of pain, there's a very difference between that and intentionally tapping out. There's a lot of good submission work actually in the Ronda Sasha match, which we'll get to here in a minute, that I think will be topic of conversation. But Shane McMahon and The Miz took on The Bar for the SmackDown Live Tag Team Championships. To me, about what I expected. I expected, you know, I think I picked The Bar, but honestly, you should know that Shane and Miz are going to go over because it's what WWE does with tag team wrestling. But the way they actually put the match on, I was entertained. Shane jumped, which, you know, hashtag Shane must jump. That's what we do when Shane McMahon wrestles in WWE. And the crowd loved it. I mean, the crowd popped huge for the Shooting Star Press out of Shane McMahon, which looked way better live from a distance than it did on camera. But it was match did exactly what it was supposed to do for me. I don't know if it was placed in the right spot, which we'll talk about here in a little bit, but I enjoyed it. What did you think of the SmackDown Tag Team Championship match?
I really enjoyed it. I thought it was fun. And kudos to Shane. I give Shane a lot of shit about, you know, his working out his daddy issues one jump at a time. And there's a lot of truth to that, especially if you watch the WWE New Orleans, the All Access WrestleMania that came on after the show. Their relationship is, you know, father and son relationships are always complicated. But,
right.
I mean, he did the damn thing, man, and executed a beautiful Shooting Star Press. It was absolutely gorgeous. And that was one of the times, another time where I think the cameraman might have messed up a little bit from on the television side, because you could see Cesaro kind of getting himself into position so he could take it so Shane wouldn't kill himself. So I thought that might have been a little bit of a club, or maybe I'm just too critical. I don't know. But, yeah, like you said, Greg, this match was exactly what it was. I think it served as a good palate cleanser between the two title matches, or the two women's matches, rather. And it was fun. And I have no problem with Shane and Miz going over. I'm interested to see where they're going to go with this storyline.
Yeah, I mean, I think the obvious storyline is Shane versus Miz and Mania, but maybe it's not. I think people are really into the Miz tag team. And if you want to build Miz as a face long term, you don't break them up. So maybe after they lose, it's Shane giving Miz his blessing to go on and try to win the world title. Who knows? There's a lot they could do there. Maybe they don't go with the stereotypical storyline. I don't know. But yeah, it was good for me. I enjoyed it. Yeah, the Shooting Star Press was funny because when Shane got up on the top rope, everybody stood up, and that's just kind of that atmosphere thing. And we had a cool couple sitting in front of us who was, big Charlotte Flair fans, but the guy was a wrestler and the girl wasn't. She kind of disappeared. She wasn't there for the Men's Rumble at all. I don't know if she was just like, I'm going to go smoke or I'm going to go sit out or who knows what, but he watched the Men's Rumble by himself. But when Shane went up to the top rope, everybody stood up and I was like, is he going to do a Shooting Star Press? And then he did and everybody went nuts. So I was lucky enough. It was one of the few things I called. I called a couple people in the Rumble. Like I called Charlotte number 13, when the buzzer went off for 13, I was like, here comes Charlotte. And then all of a sudden Charlotte comes out. So it's just weird the things you can call sometimes. But yeah, the Shooting Star was nuts live. I mean, the crowd just went absolutely crazy for it. Popped big time. And loved every second of that. So next up was your girl, Sasha Banks, who what did you think of the reaction Sasha got live? Or not live, but on television?
I thought she got a pretty decent pop. Now, when she got to the ring and the music stopped playing, it seems like there was some audible boos. Did you hear that in the crowd?
So I'll tell you this. Sasha got an amazing pop live. Like, Sasha was over. Like, when she was – her promo with Charlie Caruso was on screen, and people were just going nuts for Sasha. She got a huge pop live. As soon as the music cut off, the boos were for Ronda because everyone – when Ronda was going to come out, everyone was booing Ronda Rousey. Here's the thing. Like, when they would show videos beforehand and all that stuff, whenever Ronda was on screen, people would boo, booing the crap out of Ronda Rousey. I think people want to boo – Ronda, not because they don't want her to be there. I just think she's a natural heel. We've talked about this. You used to talk about it, you know, on the old Shot Radio back when Ronda was coming up. You talked about how she's a bitch. She's a natural heel. That's what she should be. And I think that's where people are just moving towards with Ronda Rousey.
It's funny. Last night I made the analogy that I'm Bobby Heenan to Ronda Rousey's Hulk Hogan. You know how Heenan the whole time, Heenan kept saying, oh, he's a phony, he's a fraud, he's a fluke. And then when yep. the NWA thing, and the NWO thing hit, it proved that, you know, Bobby was right this whole time. That's how I feel about Ronda Rousey. Like, amazing competitor in the ring, but yeah, she's just not a very likable person. And I think people kind of saw through that pandering act that they had her doing. They had her playing this, oh, golly gee, Willikers, I'm so humbled to be here. And it's just, it was inauthentic. And I think people picked up on that. And that's why the boos are getting more audible.
Yeah, and I think that's fine. I think the WWE is going to let people do what they want to do in terms of booing and cheering, and I'm 100% okay with it. The thing I love about Ronda's matches, that I've come to love about Ronda's matches, the same thing I love about Brock's matches, they come off as a real fight. And so they're not this, like, technical masterpiece. They're not smooth, but they're not supposed to be. Like, this is – if UFC and WWE had a baby, this is what those matches would look like. And – you know, Ronda and Sasha put on a good match, and it looked like a real fight. Like, mistakes happen. If you were in a real fight, everything would not go off smoothly. And that's what this, you know, that's how this came off to me.
That's funny. I have that argument with Andrew Blatt all the time because he's very nitpicky with his snowflake rating system. And he'll mark certain matches down if there's a flub here or there. And I tell him, I say, dude, have you ever been in an actual fight? Like, actual fights don't go smoothly. Like, shit gets fucked up sometimes.
Right.
You know what I mean? I think that adds to the realism of the simulated combat. But for my buddy Greg, this was one of my matches of the night. I kind of go back and forth, and we'll get to, you know, some other matches in that consideration down the card. But I absolutely love this match. These two women went out. They beat the holy shit out of each other. There were a couple of flubs here and there, but I love this match. And, you know, shout out to Ronda. Shout out to Sasha. I felt like they did the damn thing. One thing
they
that
did.
I picked up on, too, that I thought was kind of interesting was I feel like some of Ronda's inexperience kind of showed here. Because you talked about some of the flubs. They didn't take away from the action, but I think there were times where Sasha was trying to turn it up and Ronda just didn't have that second gear or she couldn't really hang with it. You know what I mean? But I think some of her inexperience showed here. But no, it didn't take away at all from the match. I thought it was excellent. They told a hell of a story. And Sasha's one of the ones. There's two matches on here where there's two losers, and we'll get to the other one momentarily. Where I feel like
right.
the losers actually come out looking better than they did going in.
I agree with you on that take for Sasha. I want to go back to what you were talking about with Ronda's inexperience. That's where, you know, fair isn't equal in my mind. And what I mean with that is if Finn Balor had a match where he looked inexperienced, there's a lot of room for criticism. But we know Ronda's inexperienced. Like, she's still less than a year removed from her professional wrestling debut. At WrestleMania 34. So that works for me with Ronda, but it wouldn't work for me with other people. And that's why I said fair isn't always equal in my mind. That, you know, slam she does, I don't know exactly what to call it. I don't know if it's got a name. Comes so dangerously close to hitting somebody's head, but it looks like, you know, it's that judo throw. And Sasha did a good job of selling that because it looked like she hit her head so many times, but didn't. And what I found interesting there about that slam, I'll actually jump into it now. Sasha didn't tap out to Ronda Rousey. She got pinned by Ronda Rousey. And that, I got to go back and look. That might be the first time that Ronda's pinned somebody in a title defense. But she didn't tap out when Becky Lynch did. I found that really, really interesting.
I think they called it the Piper's Pit, if I'm not mistaken.
Well, that's stupid, but okay.
Yeah, it was dumb as hell, but yeah. But no, I think you're right because I'm trying to rack my brain now, and I can't remember Ronda, yeah, not tapping anybody else. That was interesting. So they do. I know Sasha's not their horse, you know what I mean? They're, that, it's just what it is, and I've come to accept that now. But they do a really good job of keeping her strong, even though they don't want to, you know, take her to the upper echelon. They do a really good job when they can to keep her as strong as possible so that when she does lose to somebody, it actually means something.
It's funny because it's on right now, and you know, Ronda's holding the ropes open for Sasha and that sort of thing. Live, we were all like, just stop. Just stop the pandering to Sasha. Like, from Ronda's perspective, we were like, just stop shaking her hand. Stop hugging her. Like it was too much, in my opinion. But like Sasha walking back up to her a couple times and eventually giving her the four horsewoman symbol, you know, I think that's coming. I don't think we see it before, say, Survivor Series, depending on what Ronda's schedule is going to look like after Mania. But I agree with what you said a minute ago. I think Sasha came out of this looking way better than she did going in. And, you know, what they did with her the last year, not being so great, now she's in a position where, you know, she's made again based on this match because she brought it. I think it was, you know, I'm still less than 4 hours later. To me, it's still Ronda's best match that she's had so far. I need to sleep on that before I can make that official, but it felt like Ronda's best match so far.
I totally agree with that. Now, I wanted to ask you about that. What was the reaction in the crowd when Sasha threw up the four fingers?
It got a little bit of a reaction. We saw that on the screen.
Okay.
Even on, you know, on the broadcast, you can kind of hear the, oh, from people. So it got that. It got that from us, from our section. It got that from what I could hear. So every time you hear an audible increase in the crowd noise, it was probably 10 times bigger live. Just because it's a stadium show too, which has some of that aspect. But it definitely got over with what we were looking at. We noticed it. It definitely made an impact on people.
And I agree with you. This it was by far Ronda's best match, and I would love to see them go at it again. Honestly.
Yeah, we were kind of waiting for Sasha to attack Ronda. Because they showed her right at the entrance, she's got this like scowl on her face, and Ronda's walking back to the back, and we were kind of thinking she would attack, and then all of a sudden it fades out to whatever commercial they showed. So that story's there, though. That story is definitely there. I was surprised that the very next match was the Women's Royal Rumble match. Outside of Evolution, I can't think of a time where they put two women's matches back-to-back on a pay-per-view.
So what did you think? Because I think we're going to differ on this one, man. So let me get your initial reaction about the Women's World Cup. What did you think as Miz kicked ass, they show him on the screen?
I thoroughly enjoyed the Women's World Rumble match. I had a lot of fun. It made sense to me to not rely so heavily on legends like they did in the first one. There were no new legends they could give you that you didn't see the first time. So it just would have been a rehash. So giving those spots to all the NXT stars, I was fine with it. I didn't like so much how they got Becky into the match. You know, she comes out there and she's complaining that, you know, Lana can't be in because she's hurt and she should get the spot and they just give it to her. I didn't like that so much, but I get where they wanted to go with it. They didn't put any, you know, outside of Shinsuke, they didn't put anybody who had a match earlier into a Rumble match. And Shinsuke made sense, him being in there. I don't know why, if Shinsuke was in, why Rusev wasn't in, because Rusev would have gotten a huge pop. But outside of that, I really enjoyed the match. I enjoyed everything they did. I thought they made Nia look like a beast, which they should have done. I like Charlotte coming in kind of early, which they also did in the Men's Royal Rumble match. They didn't save everybody for the end. So it was enjoyable. It started off weird with Lacey Evans being number one in. I was impressed they gave her a live microphone in front of 48,000 people when she's so green. But yeah, overall, I think the Royal was quite enjoyable for me.
You know, it's funny. There's a disconnect with her character. Like, I like her heel stick. I do, but she's supposed to be this prissy upper crust woman, but yet all her outfits look like they came straight from the Burlington Coat Factory. So she's going to step her wardrobe game up a little bit to make the character a little more believable. But
I agree with you.
But in terms of the match, you know, this is why I rated the show overall a 7 out of 10. I just really didn't enjoy this match. I agree with you that they didn't. Yeah, not at all. I agree with you that they didn't really have any more legends that they could have pulled out of the hat. But I feel like the match kind of suffered from that. And frankly, I found it kind of boring. And I think the match also suffered because going into it, we knew it was a two-horse race, first and foremost. And, yeah, there were times I almost fell asleep, to be honest with you. Like, my lady had to nudge me a couple of times to wake me back up. And I had to go grab a beer to try to get my energy back up. It just, yeah, it just didn't work for me.
That's good to hear. I mean, it definitely is good to get that perspective. Live, it worked. A lot of those names that we hadn't seen before, like a Casey Catanzaro, like she comes out there. She actually got a bigger pop than you would think she would. I don't know if you heard this. Did you know she's with Ricochet?
Yeah, actually, Ray Cash talked about that last night. I had no idea until last night
yeah.
he told me that.
You know, when I find that interesting because obviously she's still got connections. And, you know, WWE has a relationship with NBC. I feel like he should definitely be a contestant on American Ninja Warrior.
Oh, yeah, most definitely. That would be interesting. A, it'd be a good way to get him over. B,
yeah,
just the crossover appeal. That's perfect.
He might finish. He might finish the damn thing too. Like, he might actually finish that. But her spot in the Rumble, because you know, I loved in this Rumble. They had two different Kofi spots. They had Naomi with the Kofi spot, and they had Casey successfully doing the Kofi spot. I loved when Naomi came in. She went right after Mandy Rose like that. It felt very like Rick Martel, Tito Santana to me. They went right after each other. I absolutely loved when Naomi was doing the Kofi spot and she jumped over the stairs and then Mandy pulled her off, causing her to be eliminated.
Great.
Like I
that's,
jumped out of my
great.
Seat. Like when we talk about it tomorrow on the show, Miranda will tell you, like, you know, there are moments where people mark out for stuff. I literally became a little bitch. Like I jumped up and down. I was screaming and yelling. Like I absolutely loved what they did with Mandy eliminating Naomi that way. So that was a great, great moment for me.
That was awesome, man. That was over here in my household as well, because my lady, she was legitimately pissed off. She said she did all of that just for that. I said, sweetie, that's good heel work. That's classic.
Exactly.
Right there. That's awesome.
But that was beautiful heel work.
Like, now, the match picked up at the end, you know, with Becky and Charlotte and Nia Jax out there. I didn't so much mind the way that they let Becky in the match. I actually thought it was good storytelling. Like, they actually told a cohesive story that started in
right.
the pre-show, you know what I mean, with the Shinsuke and Rusev match. That's what caused Rusev the title. And ultimately, you know, you see Lana coming out here limping. So I thought that was good.
Yeah. Interesting that
I would have preferred if she beat somebody up, but I guess we'll get
right.
to that later on in the show.
Yeah, it wouldn't have made sense for her to beat up Lana, though, because Lana didn't do anything to her. And that's sort of Becky's thing. Like, Becky is only going to go after you if you went after her. So, you know, maybe she beat up Nia and took her spot. That would have been interesting. But I think they wanted Nia to be in the match. The countdown didn't last long for the crowd in terms of, you know, we'd start counting at 10. The crowd was a lot more into the countdown early. By the end of the Men's Royal Rumble, people were counting. They stopped doing the buzzer. When they did the countdown before the show began, that was the loudest count I ever heard. Like when it hit 10 seconds, people would count it. And then when it hit zero, you had 40,000 people doing a buzzer noise with their mouth. Like that was just, I didn't realize it was going to be like that. But
and
yeah,
I'm not surprised that
I'm
not surprised it came across better live. It's kind of hard to have a bad Rumble experience when you're there just because, you know, the countdown and the surprise and just the atmosphere. I don't think you can have a bad Rumble experience actually being there. So I get that totally. But, yeah, on television, it was boring. And I'm not the biggest NXT mark, so there were a couple of these young ladies that I wasn't that familiar with, so that probably contributed too. And I just felt like overall it lacked star power. It looked like Charlotte and the Musketeers or Gladys Knight in the Pits or something like that.
It really was. It was Charlotte. You had Charlotte, you had Becky, and you had Nia, and those were the big major stars in the match. Late. The whole Zelina thing, like, this is literally like the third time she's done the hide under the ring gimmick and in a match. I loved when Maria Kanellis came out only because of all the reporting that she had asked for her release and all of that. Like when she came out, I think I even tweeted, I was like, bravo to you for putting her in the Royal Rumble after all of that. Like, it was just such a big middle finger to all the reporting and everything else. I enjoyed that. It's funny, too, because with her being with Alicia Fox, I mean, those are two that were there, you know, in the mid-2000s. And here they are in 2018, 2019, in the Women's Royal Rumble match. So, you know, Miranda jokingly was like, legends. She's like, would you consider Maria a legend? I was like, I wouldn't, but she was there when the other legends were.
They're definitely the OG. So I thought that was cool, too. And just the fact that Alicia Fox has hung around this long with the company, like, kudos to her, seriously. I don't think she gets enough credit. I think we need to start giving her flowers a little more. Plus, he's a damn good in-ring performer. She's super athletic, and I never dug the crazy chick gimmick, but, yeah, she's a good worker.
Oh, yeah, she's big. I'm underrated. People don't give her the credit that she deserves in a lot of ways. So definitely believe that. You know, I think a lot of people were wondering about Bella Twins because they are local to this area. I don't think this match would have benefited from them being there. Like, it just would have been a rehash of last year. You know, Asuka wasn't in the match. Ronda wasn't in the match because they're champions. So it you know, hurts things a little bit more. The match could have used like a Sasha Banks for sure. Would have been a great late entry, but this match came right after her title match, so it would have been really difficult to do that. But overall, I definitely enjoyed it.
I thought it was weird that there was no Bella in any capacity whatsoever, not even a backstage segment or anything like that, considering that is their hometown. But yeah, I don't think they would have added anything to the match. No disrespect to them, but yeah, their moment was last year during the first one. You know, Nikki main event at the Evolution pay-per-view. I think it's time to move on with that.
Yeah, like I think they make a special appearance. They could possibly even be in the Elimination Chamber match for the tag titles. Who knows? But I think it played out the way it was supposed to. And that's why this was in the middle. I actually kind of wonder if you could have put this match on last only because Becky was winning. That, you know, with Becky coming out victorious, you very much could have had one on the end and people would have been happy. But overall, you know who got pop? And I was just reminded as it comes up on my screen. Nikki Cross.
Yeah, like that came across on TV too. Yeah.
Yeah, people love Nikki Cross. Yeah, well, and she just plays her role so well.
She does. She's an interesting character. She's kind of a throwback. Like I think of her like those, you remember you used to have those weird psychotic dudes that would just, you know, maim people back in the day. She's very throwback in her character. So it's going to be interesting to see how they incorporate her into the whole women's evolution or the women's division period. And listen, man, I say this damn near every show I'm on, I'm going to say it again. If I'm Lifetime or Oxygen or We or even an ESPN or whatever the case may be, I'm going to holler at WWE, man, and see if I can get like an hour's television worth of just the women. They're the hottest thing in wrestling right now. It would look good from a PR standpoint, you know what I mean? And they deserve their own show. There's enough talented women and capable women that they need their own show.
It's interesting you say that because in watching the Royal Rumble match and seeing all the talent, like a Rhea Ripley, who was just a monster in there and is so good and so young, and you know Toni Storm, who wasn't even in the match, and just the young talent they have, and the fact that, you know, tonight of seven matches on the main card, quote-unquote main card, you had three of them were women's matches, and that's, you know, almost 50%. I mean, that's one, you know, one more match, they would have been the majority of the show. Like, and I don't even think people notice anymore the women are featured in the way they are. 42% of this card were women's matches on a WWE pay-per-view. That's a big deal that you don't normally see. And, you know, and while they were all early, you know, the last three matches were all men's matches, which we'll get to. 5 years from now, they're going to have to give the women their own show. Like, there's too much talent there and so much to be featured. I just can't see how they don't have their own brand and shine on their own, to be honest with you. So I agree with you.
It tickles me pink, man, going back to, you know, back in the day in the Attitude Era, the bra and panty matches and the gravy boat matches and all that goofy shit. So now you have these women that they're doing the damn thing, and they are the most interesting and entertaining part of all of WWE television. And I just think it's cool, and kudos to them, man, really. But they need their own show, and I'm not just talking about on the network, you know, like 25 Live or something like that. Yeah, they need their own show.
Yeah, I think they could get money from somebody to have that show. I don't think they need to put it on the network at all. Not one bit. So after the Women's Royal Rumble match, you had AJ Styles versus Daniel Bryan. Now, how did this one come off on TV?
Number one, it was a damn good wrestling match. I thought that this was their best match. Unfortunately, the crowd seemed dead as disco during the entire thing. Like
you are 100% right.
You couldn't have cared less. Like these guys were going in there busting their ass, having a great match, and yeah, it just looked like y'all couldn't have cared less.
After the emotional roller coaster of Becky Lynch and the Royal Rumble, nothing was going to go well, to be honest with you. Like those guys had the toughest spot on the card. And knowing where they had Eric Rowan go out, a ref bump, interfere, I get it. I think they realized how the fans were going to respond, and so they put it there. I would have put the tag match here, and either did AJ and Daniel Bryan before the Women's Royal Rumble match, or did the Women's Royal Rumble one match early, you know, move the tag match, shifted things around. But in my opinion, that match was doomed to fail because of what it came after. That was like, that match was the equivalent of Tamina entering the Women's Royal Rumble. Like, no one cared whatsoever. Tamina, by the way, I can't stand. I just want to point that out. but you're right, though. It was a good match, and I hope it gets remembered as a good match. And I'm liking the whole Eric Rowan being out there with Daniel Bryan. Like, I can dig that.
No, I can dig it as well. And they kind of telegraphed it with Eric coming out in the flannel shirt. You kind of knew where they were going. But I don't think it took away from that at all. One thing that stood out in this match to me, though, is Daniel Bryan took a lot of headshots. Like, there was a couple of times where I cringed a little bit. Like, it was the first time since he's come back. And I didn't even do this during the Brock match, where I was reminded about his previous condition. You know what I mean? Or the reason that he had to step away from the ring. Like, he took some pretty hard, stiff headshots. And I cringed on a few of them.
Interesting. I haven't noticed that. I need to go back and rewatch the match. I want to rewatch the match because it kind of suffered from the place I want to see it for myself from an actual match quality. So I'm going to make sure to see that because I didn't know it live, but I definitely want to see that on the broadcast. The whole Eric Rowan thing, I mean, he obviously wasn't going to be out there for AJ Styles. So I think that him out there with Daniel Bryan. So let me ask you this. With Seth Rollins winning the Men's Royal Rumble, which, you know, we're not spoiling anything at this point, and Daniel Bryan retaining the WWE Championship, where do they go with Daniel Bryan at WrestleMania? Like, what are they going to do with that?
I have no idea. And that's why last week I floated out the idea of possibly like a Rey Mysterio winning the Rumble, because I have no idea where you go with Daniel Bryan. There's not a lot of credible baby faces on the SmackDown side to challenge him. And, yeah, I don't know. Maybe you run this back. I don't know. I have no idea where they go with him for a Rumble.
I think you hit something really really important there when you said maybe they run this back. That's my thinking too. Like, I think we might see AJ Styles and Daniel Bryan at WrestleMania, and you've got with Eric Rowan being out there with Daniel Bryan, maybe this is their opportunity to link AJ Styles with the club again and try to, you know, play off of some of that too. So I agree with you. I honestly think that the match might be Daniel Bryan and AJ Styles again for WrestleMania, or a multi-man match too. Like because it probably wouldn't go on last anyway, I could see them pulling like a, you know, a 4-way or a 5-way or a 6-way for that title. And I would be okay with it. We haven't done it in so long. It would be entertaining and I'd be all right with it as long as it was given time and portrayed as a big major match. I'd be all right with it, but it's going to be interesting. Have to let them tell their stories and see what happens over on SmackDown.
Do you think that they would do an Iron Man match? Not 60, but, you know, a 30-minute Iron Man match? Because I'm assuming if you're going to run this back for Mania, you have to do something to up the ante a little bit.
I hope not. I hate Iron Man matches. I just – the problem with an Iron Man match for me is they're basically telling you can wait 30 minutes and watch this match later, like, or however long it might be. I'm one of the few people, I didn't like the Bret Hart Shawn Michaels Iron Man match from WrestleMania. I thought they would have been better off making it 2 out of 3 falls and having it go to a time limit draw, 1 fall apiece, and then having Gorilla Monsoon do the overtime. Like, it just telegraphs the ending so much for me when you do an Iron Man match. Like, part of the appeal to a match is you don't know when it's going to end. And the only match where you know when it's going to end is an Iron Man match.
Fair enough. Maybe I'm waxing nostalgic because I'm thinking back like to the Iron Man matches in WCW with Ricky the Dragon Steamboat and Rick Rude, stuff like that, and some of the Ric Flair classics and whatnot. So
I agree.
But it is a hard match to pull off because it's hard to hold somebody's attention because there isn't that spontaneity. Like, you know what's going to happen. And you have a point.
Yeah, plus if two people fight for 20 minutes to get one fall, and now we're doing a 30-minute Iron Man match and there's like 6 falls, that doesn't make sense to me either. So I just noticed when Naomi entered the Royal Rumble, she got the floating graphics and no one else did for their Royal Rumble entrance. So I just love how much this company loves Naomi and how much they support her. So
I think it's awesome, man, that she's come so far, too, man. And she's made herself into a damn good worker and a damn good character as well.
We've kind of crossed the line a little bit on the show before. Some of the black females in WWE don't look black. Like, they dress a certain way, they color their hair in a certain way, and it's almost like they're trying to whitify them a little bit. And they've never tried that with Naomi, in my opinion. And I think that's a real thing. I don't know. What do you think?
No, you know what? I agree with you 100%. Like, yeah, she's black, and that's a good thing. And it comes across as authentic.
It's a great thing.
Because you do see that a lot with, like, Foxy and back in the day, even Layla and people. And there's some other ones, too. But, no, I agree with you. Her and Bianca Belair, they come across as more genuine than a lot of the other black females on the roster. And, yeah, they're both super over in this household.
Yeah, and I love it. Just watching it. And I just saw the Mandy Rose spot. And what surprised me, which I didn't realize, how many people actually popped for it. People like when heel things.
Yeah, it takes you back to your childhood, man. You know what I mean? It's awesome.
It does. It does. So shifting as, you know, you get my watching reaction along with as we talk about the show. Finn Balor, well, the AJ Styles and Daniel Bryan thing, I want to go back to that. Eric Rowan being with Daniel Bryan, you know, and what it does for his character. What are your thoughts there?
I think it's great, man, if he could use some henchmen on his side. You know what I mean? It's like back in the day, like in the cartoons, where the big boss would be the smallest dude, and he'd have these two big goons just, you know, doing all this dirty work. So I think that's cool. And it's good for him to have some disciples. Do you think they're going to put Luke Harper in that group as well, or are they just going to stick with as we call him T-Tink in this house, because that's the sound his music makes?
It's interesting because Luke Harper reportedly is still not clear to compete. Now, it doesn't mean he couldn't come out there and be with somebody. I could see it. I could see them giving Daniel Bryan multiple henchmen. I don't think he needs more than one. I would love to see him come out on Eric Rowan's shoulders, holding the belt up high. Like, that would just make me happy.
Him to walk out the ring like that. I actually had that in my notes. Like, I said, like, Prince in the club. Or did you ever see that clip where it's James Brown and he calls up Michael Jackson on stage? Michael comes up, he does a couple of moves, and he sings. And then he sees Prince, so he calls Prince up on stage. And Prince literally is walking on his – or is on his the shoulders of his bodyguard, and his bodyguard is walking into the stage. He lets him off stage. He takes the lollipop out of his mouth and hands it to his bodyguard to hold while he goes on and does the same. That's what I wanted Daniel Bryan to do last night.
And I hope he does. I hope Eric Rowan holds the title. I hope they just go full bore with that. But, you know, talk about the giveaway and Eric Rowan coming out when he did. Because of the length of the walkway and everything, he had to come out early. Plus, I think it added to the intrigue. I think it's going to be absolutely great. And I think Daniel Bryan – I give credit to Daniel Bryan because he wants to be a heel in an era where it's really hard to be a heel. And he is going all in on it, and which is funny because he's the one that people love so much, yet he's doing such a good job, and that's a credit to him as a performer. He's doing an amazing job as a performer to go out there and be that heel. So kudos to him for doing that. It wouldn't surprise me if pairing himself up with somebody like an Eric Rowan was his idea.
I could see that, and yeah, I agree with you. I mean, do you know how hard it has to be Daniel Bryan to get people to actually boo you? So, yeah, it is really a credit to him as a performer, and he is going all in with it. And frankly, this is probably closer to his real-life character, like douchebag vegan. I can see that. And he believes everything he's saying. And he's not wrong either in what he's saying. That's
exactly. Heels usually aren't. Like, a lot of the time, heels are right in what they're saying. They're just telling the truth. And that's, you know, that's the crazy thing about it. But, yeah, I love him. I love him for what he's doing, and I love him for what he's trying to be in an era where it's really hard to be that. So it's going to be interesting to WrestleMania for Daniel Bryan. I can't wait for Daniel Bryan to enter WrestleMania as a big bad heel. So it's going to be very exciting. Next up, we have Finn Balor versus Brock Lesnar. I'll let you go first. Like, what did you think of this match?
This match was awesome. And I put this between this match and the Charlotte Sasha Ronda match. This is my 1-1A for match of the night. This was awesome. There was a palatable energy in this match as well, and electricity that only Brock can bring. So like I talked about, one of the things I didn't like about the Women's Rumble was that the lack of star power. And sometimes in AJ Styles matches, no disrespect to him, obviously he's one of the best in the world. Nobody would dispute that. But he tends to, he has to have some matches on bigger stages where the crowd was just totally not into it. I mean, I think of the Nakamura match. I think about his feud with Kevin Owens. And I'm sure there's some other ones I can think of. Oh, the Jericho match from 32 at Dallas. Good match, but yeah, the crowd just wasn't here for it. You don't have that problem with Brock whatsoever. Everything that he does and everything they've done to build him up to this point, it's working now. Because now you buy into all the hope spots, you buy into all the false finishes, and you really want to see somebody derail the beast. And it just adds for you get that big fight feel, and it comes across on the screen. So I'm sure that electricity was felt in the arena as well.
It was. I mean, Brock Lesnar, like, this match and this card in general has completely changed my perspective on wrestling fans and the product that WWE puts out. People never sat down during this match. Like, this was the only match of the night where people didn't sit down. From the moment Finn came out to the moment the match ended, people remained on their feet. This is why you have Brock Lesnar, this match. Like you talked about, that energy. And I think the reason why some wrestling fans hate it so much, sort of the internet marks, because they can't explain it. They can't explain why he's so over. They can't explain why he gets the reaction he does. But, I mean, it was palpable, like you said. I mean, you were just – people were just hinged on every little thing that happened in that match. I loved it. I loved every second of it. I wasn't mad. You know, I wanted Finn to win. I picked Finn to win. I wasn't mad at the outcome. I wasn't mad at anything. This match was very well done by both performers. And I thought Finn looked great coming out of it. And I was surprised he tapped out. You know, it is a weird show. Again, you had Becky Lynch tapping out. Sasha didn't tap out. You had Finn Balor tapping out. But thoroughly enjoyed this match. I think it was great. I think Finn looks good. I'll be interested to see what they do with Finn next, because I don't know where they go from here. There may be more with Finn and Brock because of the fact that Brock continued to attack Finn Balor so much after the match. That seems to tell me it's not over. But it'll be interesting to see what they do. But I'm with you, man. I loved this match. Thought it was outstanding.
The announcers did a really good job of putting over the tap-out finish during the broadcast. I don't know if you got a chance to go back and listen. But they basically played it off as, he was a wounded animal, and it was purely instinctual. And I thought that was a good way to put it. Like, he was clearly in trouble, and Finn had him on the ropes, and he just went back on what he knew. So I thought they did a good job of putting it over. And this was the other match, as I talked about earlier, that the loser came out of this looking much stronger than they did going into it. And this is another one that I'd like to see him running back as well. I hope that beat down angle will lead to them going back at it. Perhaps we get to see the Demon the next time. But either way, they did a good job with this match. Finn looks awesome. He took it to the beast. He was laying that shit in hard, too. Like, they beat the hell out of each other in this match. And the offense was very believable. And then you really thought Finn had a legitimate shot in this match. And I too, was
you
one
did.
Of those jokers that picked Finn to win. But, yeah, they did a great job telling this story. And kudos to Brock Lesnar. That's another guy. We got to start giving him his flowers as well. Because how many bad matches has he really had? Period. But especially since he's been back this next run. And people say, oh, well, his matches are predictable and he does the same thing. But he does it very well.
You know, it's funny you talk about his matches are predictable and he does the same thing. I played high school football. And we used to begin the game with the same running play. And it was called 38. And we would run that play. And we'd run it 10 times if it worked 10 times. Like, we basically – we would come out and the coach would say, run it until they stop it. And sometimes we would score a touchdown before they ever stopped it. And it's the same thing with me with Brock Lesnar. He doesn't need to be different. No one can stop what he's doing now. Why should he be different? Like, it doesn't make any sense. Like, you don't, you know, you want Brock to do something else, stop him. And no one's been able to. So, I'm fine with it. I'm absolutely fine with the Brock Lesnar character. He's the big bad guy. He's the big boss that you need to beat at the end of the game. I have nothing wrong with it. The thing with me for this match was the story they were telling was that no one believed Finn Balor can do it. You know, the whole David versus Goliath and all of that. And when you lose in that case, you kind of prove the naysayers right. So you've got to do something else. It's kind of that Daniel Bryan WrestleMania 30 situation all over again. I do agree with you. I think that Finn might need to bust out the Demon to beat Brock Lesnar.
You know, it's funny. I did kind of get Booker T, Triple H, WrestleMania 19 vibe. in this one as well. Because, yeah, they did such a good job of building him up as the underdog. And then, yeah, again, like you said, when you lose, you got to prove everybody right. So I get you. I get you on that one.
Although yeah, like maybe.
They made Finn look much stronger in this match than they made Booker look versus Triple H. That's neither here nor there.
And I definitely do understand that. To me, so here's the crazy thing. What if the end game is actually Seth Rollins versus Daniel Bryan and Finn Balor versus Brock Lesnar at WrestleMania? What if, what if that's the direction they want to go in and Finn, ends up winning, Elimination Chamber or something like that, and then we see the Demon at WrestleMania? You got to figure out what they do. Otherwise, what do you do with Finn? Bobby Lashley? Like, and maybe you go that route and have him challenge for the Intercontinental Championship at WrestleMania? I don't know.
I wouldn't be mad at that. The only thing is, for the past few months, Seth Rollins has been taking little pot shots at Brock Lesnar. So I think they've got to send that story up. But, I mean, it wouldn't be the first time that they just totally dropped the storyline and with no rhyme or reason to it. So I wouldn't mind seeing this brand back at Mania. And I don't really think they have anything better to put on there. Like, I'm not salivating at the possibility of Brock Lesnar versus Seth Rollins. No disrespect to Seth, but that just doesn't make me moist. So I would much rather see that, but, we'll see.
I agree with you. It's interesting because, Seth Rollins is kind of the guy by default, and I think he deserves to be there, but the reaction piece of it is very, very interesting. So I'll be good to see what they do and how they treat it moving forward. That's what the road to WrestleMania is all about. We shouldn't necessarily know what's going to happen and what's coming next. So that's why it's the road to WrestleMania. Next up, we had the Men's Royal Rumble match. So Elias being number one made sense. We could not see, even though we're in the arena, we didn't know Elias was in the ring until they made the announcement. It made perfect sense when the lights came on and there he was. Thought he did a great job. Again, in front of, 48,000 people, he had everyone in the palm of his hands. Like, kudos to Elias for doing that. What did you think when Jeff Jarrett was number two?
Shout out to Jeff Jarrett, the greatest worker in the history of the business, and it has absolutely, positively nothing to do with his in-ring ability. This guy is great. Come on, man. He finessed Dixie Carter out the money. He finessed Toby Keith out the money. He finessed people into overpaying for gold. He finessed his way back into the WWE even after he stiffed them for the China money. Like, this guy, he's an awesome worker. He finessed his way into multiple WCW championship reigns. He finessed his way going back and forth, playing both companies against each other during the Attitude Era. Like, it seemed like every other month, Jeff was in WCW. Now he's in WWE. Now he's back in WCW. Like, this guy's a phenomenal worker, and he deserves his props, man. He's up there with the Ric Flairs and the Shawn Michaels and anybody else you want to throw in there. You got to include Jeff Jarrett, baby.
Yeah, 100%. Like, you said it. He's the greatest worker in the history of business. Like, And he's not even that great in the ring, but what he did and being able to get himself in those positions, I mean, that is, kudos to him. Like, he deserves everything he's gotten because he maneuvered his way in, and that's a big, it's a political business, and no one has mastered the politics of the business better than Jeff Jarrett.
Never in the history of existence has somebody with such marginal talent achieved such extraordinary fame. I
popped
my collar to Double J, man.
Yep, I'm with you. 100%. 100%. Good on him. He did his role. I mean, I didn't expect him to be in the Royal Rumble a long time. Kurt Angle at number four, huge pop. I mean, just a huge pop from everybody. Loved the pop for Kurt Angle. I thought Kurt looked okay. I mean, obviously a Royal Rumble is going to hide Kurt's, deficiencies at his age, but I thought Kurt looked pretty good.
Kurt's one that I'd be cool if I never saw him wrestle again because I get nervous every time I'm out there. Granted, he's a good enough worker where he can protect himself, and they go out of the way to protect him as well. But I'm just nervous for him, especially knowing what we know now with CTE. And, we have a lot more information than we did back in the day. So it makes me nervous seeing him out there wrestling. But he was cool for what he was. He got a good nostalgia pop. And, it's still Kurt Angle. It's good to see him.
Yeah, exactly. Got a huge pop. Got an absolutely huge pop when he did that. Interesting tweet that I saw. So when I retweeted it on my Twitter, and it's my mentions are overloaded, so I'm trying to find it. But basically, someone who's here local was at the Royal Rumble, and she was sitting like up towards the front, and she basically tweeted about how, and she's like a New Japan All Elite Wrestling fan. She's all into the wrestling, you know, all the thing. Her tweet was, you know, like, I got to mark out for Becky. I got to scream, you suck it. And, you know, I got to walk Elias and see Jeff Jarrett. Like, she's marking about all the little things. Like, that's what it's all about to me. Like, that's what this is, what the WWE is to so many people. It's a show. It's a spectacle. And I think that's okay. I really do.
No, I totally agree. I mean, the WWE is the WWE for a reason. And nobody does it like they do. Nobody does it better than they do. And when they want to put on a show, they know how to put on a show. So I agree with that. While I'm excited about the possibility of AEW, this is why I don't take them as a serious, credible threat to WWE. Like, they're light years. The WWE is light years ahead of anybody at this particular point in time. Can they be a viable number two? And does it provide leverage for the men and women wrestlers? Yes, that's the best thing that's come out this whole thing. But WWE's in a whole nother stratosphere, man. I mean, they're colonizing now. You know what I mean? They've got colonies over in the UK. They'll probably have one up in India soon. They're still trying to break into the Asian market. They're just on a whole. They're it's like apples and orangutans.
Oh yeah, yeah, I agree with you 100%. And but here's the thing: it's okay to like both. It's okay to like NXT and WWE. Like, that's the biggest – it's not adversarial. Nobody – there was no chance at TakeOver about, you know, better than the main roster or anything like that. Like, people liked both, and that was okay. And I think that's what we're getting to, is that everything – it's okay to have all this different product, and there's something for everybody. So I'm all right with that.
Yeah. Everything doesn't have to be so goddamn polarizing. Everything doesn't have to be Democrat, Republicans, or Coke or Pepsi, or – you know, Dan or Dave or whatever the case may be. Like, you're absolutely right. Especially as a wrestling fan, why wouldn't you just root for everybody to succeed? A rising tide raises all boats. So there's enough room out here for everybody. There's enough chicken for everybody to eat.
Definitely. I agree with you. I agree with you 100%. So the Men's Royal Rumble match, I mean, after Kurt Angle, it was just kind of people coming in. I mean, Seth Rollins came out very early, especially for a winner, which I liked. You know, Dean Ambrose came in shortly after him as well. So, you know, Seth winning from, I think, number 10 was when he came in. That's a surprise to me, but one that I'm down with, because it fits in with what Seth does and the physical conditioning and all of that. If Seth winning feels like paint by numbers and the way he beat Braun, like, you know, I'm okay with it. It was expected, but sometimes expected is okay. I mean, sometimes the favorite can win in sports, you know, the favorite wins sometimes as well. So I was down with that. But overall, what'd you think of the Men's Rumble with, you know, cool, maybe the lack of surprises and the NXT guys? How'd you feel about it?
You know, it wasn't one of my favorite men's Rumble matches. It certainly didn't lack the star power that they had last year. I mean, they had real heavy guns in there last couple of years, actually. But it was cool for what it was. It was paid by numbers. We knew going into it was going to be a two-trick pony. And then when McIntyre got eliminated, we knew what was going to happen. Especially that was cemented when Bobby Lashley threw Seth through the table. I think that spot is kind of overdone at this point in time. I
agree with you.
You shall not be named spot, you know. But it was a cool match for what it was. There was good moments. I think the NXT guys did well for themselves. I love Pete Dunne. Yeah, he acquitted himself very well. Aleister Black looked good. It was good to see Johnny Gargano out there. I was mad disappointed that Velveteen Dream didn't show up.
Uh-huh.
So my two big predictions that I had my hats on, neither one of them came true. So my credibility is just out the window, but whatever.
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned that, the whole Velveteen Dream thing. You know, knowing who was announced and who could still possibly come out, once Ziggler came out, we knew there was no Velveteen Dream because you still needed Orton and you still had R-Truth. So that, you know, kind of shot it on Velveteen Dream right there. Because I was 100% sure Velveteen was going to be in the Rumble. Like, it just made so much sense for him to make the Rumble appearance. Aleister Black being in the Rumble, I thought was really, really good. I think he might be making the move to the main roster sooner than later. Gargano, you know, he's title in NXT, so he's not moving anytime soon. But he got a big pop as well, so good on them.
I'd love to see Aleister Black work a program with either Daniel Bryan or Rey Mysterio. Like, number one, the verbal back and forth between him and Bryan would be gold. But in the ring, I think they would make magic together. So, yeah, I'm a huge Aleister Black guy, and I think it's time for him to be called up. There's nothing more for him to do on
NXT
at this point.
It just makes me – I get so worried because there's not a lot of room on the main roster for people. But Aleister Black belongs there. So, you know, I'm down with it. So let's have some fun. R-Truth, number 30 in the Royal Rumble, of course, didn't make it to the ring because he got attacked by Nia Jax. Nia Jax didn't get permission like Becky Lynch did, but still made her way into the Royal Rumble match and had a good showing. First of all, it's funny because R-Truth comes out and he sings a song and, you know, 48,000 people are screaming, "What's up?" And because he can't see the entrance for most of the arena, he just stops singing. And we have no idea why. And then all of a sudden you start to hear this cut. And that's where not being able to see the entrance is actually a fun thing. Because then you start to hear this commotion and you're wondering what's going on and it builds up. And then it shows up on the screen and you see that Nia Jax is beating the crap out of R-Truth. And the crowd out live, they went nuts for it. People were here for Nia Jax in the Royal Rumble. So what'd you think of Nia Jax in the men's Royal Rumble match?
I thought it was awesome. And, you know, you alluded to this, I believe, on Friday, that this might be the Becky spot. So this is basically the Becky spot that you talked about. It's just that they did it with Nia as opposed to Becky. But I thought it was great. She went in there. She held her own. She kicked ass. She took names. And the fact that, you know, she had to take a 619, an RKO, and a super kick to get her out of there, she came out looking strong as hell. I thought it was
she sure did.
Spot.
Yeah, I loved, and it was funny because you just saw that Orton wanted to do the RKO on her, but they still built it so well, and I really enjoyed every bit of Nia Jax being in there. Almost kind of came off as a babyface for a little bit, but then of course once she once she kind of turned around and attacked Rey Mysterio, she was back to her heel ways. But they made her look credible. They made her look really, really credible.
Orton, when he's dialed in, he's so damn good because just that simple look, that set the table for everything that came after that. And it did build that anticipation for the eventual RKO. And I like that they didn't give it to us right away. They teased it. And, yeah, it was a great spot. She was getting kind of a baby face reaction because, I mean, it's kind of a baby face thing to do. You go in
it
and
is,
beat up a guy. Yeah, it was a real baby face. And kudos to her. Are you starting to like Nia more? Because I think you were kind of on the Nia hate train for a while.
Liked what Nia did last night. I don't know if I like Nia more. I think it was a smart way to use Nia. I think she delivered where she needed to deliver. That doesn't mean I'm turning around my opinion on Nia. But maybe her size and the way she wrestles just isn't well suited to the rest of the women's roster. I don't know. She looked like she belonged when she was in there with the men. I give her credit. One thing that Nia doesn't do, she doesn't hide her body. Like, she doesn't wear gear like Karma did that hides her body. She completely lives it and wears it and makes no qualms about it, which I really do appreciate. But, yeah, I don't know. The jury's still out, I guess, on Nia Jax for me. I guess I'm willing to watch and willing to listen.
Fair enough. That's all I could ask for.
You know, I need to go back and look at the timestamps on these things. The women's Royal Rumble match clocked at 1 hour and 12 minutes. I need to go back and see, like, that might be the longest ever Royal Rumble. I need to go back and watch. Yeah, like, it was long. It was really, really long. I
felt like I was watching Shawshank Redemption or Gladiator or something like that. Like, it was, or Schindler's List or something. Like, it felt every bit of 1 hour and 12 minutes, at least on my end.
Yeah, it was. Like, it was very, very interesting how long that went. I didn't realize until I looked it up just how long that Royal Rumble match was. But, hey, you know, that's what it's about. It is the Royal Rumble. So, and the women were given their chance to shine. And I do like that. So, Seth Rollins is the man, and he did win the Royal Rumble. We talked about this a little bit, but, you know, how do you feel about Seth Rollins being the Royal Rumble winner?
It is what it is, man. It's the inevitable. It's like the Patriots in the Super Bowl every year. Regardless of what you think, it's going to happen. So I'm not that excited looking into it or, you know, looking forward to it. I remember last week, we might even talked about this, that he cut his Come to Jesus baby face, declaring himself the man promo, and it did nothing for me whatsoever. Like, that was the one that's supposed to galvanize the people behind him, and it did absolutely nothing. I understand why he the guy right now. He's kind of the guy by default, as you alluded to earlier. But I'm not excited at all about a possible Brock Seth match. I'm just not. And no disrespect to him. I'm good. I mean, that's where we're heading, but, you know,
I agree with you. I agree with you there. I feel like when you look back at Seth Rollins' career, it feels like he should be a guy who won a Royal Rumble. Like, that seems to me like Seth Rollins should be a multi-time Royal Rumble winner in his career. We're just kind of in the middle of it right now, and there's just so much going on. And because WWE doesn't have that well-defined top star, we as fans see our own options and our own, you know, other people we could put in that position. So I think that's why, you know, it could be someone else besides Seth Rollins, but really in a lot of ways it couldn't be someone else besides Seth Rollins. So we'll see what they do. They're going to give him the ball and let him run with it. So, you know, that's what we're going to do with Seth Rollins. Now we got to see what happens. It'll be interesting to see what happens with WrestleMania, though. So we'll find out soon enough. It's the road, man. You excited about the road to WrestleMania?
Oh, I'm always excited about the road. It's a little more windy than it used to be back in the day. We've got a couple of pit stops that we've got to get through. But they didn't really tip their hand too much last night either. Like, there were a couple of issues, you know, Seth, the winners of the Rumble with Becky and Seth, but we kind of knew that they were heading those places in those storylines. But other than that, they didn't really set too much else up last night. So I'm excited to tune into Raw tonight to see what happens. And yeah, I'm excited about being on the road this period, man. This is the most wonderful time of the year for wrestling fans.
Exactly. You're exactly right. It's what it is. Most wonderful time of the year, most exciting time of the year, and should be good. So, awesome. Well, let's wrap things up for today. You can find me on the Twitter at ChairShotGreg, and, of course, the website is thechairshot.com, at thechairshot.com on the Twitter also. Chris, remind everybody where they can find you, good sir.
Hey, you guys can find me on Twitter at TheRealCPlat, and I'm not sure if the pro wrestling season's still up, but what the hell, man? It's mania season, man. Show us some love. Go to prowrestlingtees.com/thechairshot. Pick up your official chair shot merchandise. Remember, ladies and gentlemen, thechairshot.com, it's not just a website, it's a movement.
All right. Well, I appreciate you taking some time out today. It's been our longest one so far, but we had a lot to talk about. And we should be on board for tomorrow, man, so I do appreciate it.
Sounds good, man. I'm looking forward to tuning in to Raw tonight and see where we go. And happy trails, man. We on the road.
Exactly. A road to WrestleMania doesn't get any better than this. So if you can't be a fan now, you should just stop watching, in all honesty.
And probably kill yourself, but at least stop watching.
Yeah, I can't advocate for the second part, but I can advocate for the first part. Just stop watching. All right, brother. We'll talk to you later.
All right, brother.
Greetings and salutations, ladies and gentlemen. I am Mr. Velvet Pipes himself, the MVP, Mr. Christopher Platt, reminding you all to make sure you go to prowrestlingtees.com/thechairshot and pick up your official, like a referee's whistle, chair shot t-shirt. We've got them all. We've got all colors. We've got all shapes and sizes. We got them all for the men, the women, and the babies, from 8 to 80. Blind, crippled, and crazy. It doesn't matter. Make sure you join the movement and go to prowrestlingtees.com/thechairshot. Pick up your official chair shot t-shirts, ladies and gentlemen. Shalom. And always use your head.